And now, the Last Word on Habs podcast, brought to you by the Last Word on Sports Network. Let's start the show.
Welcome back to the Last Word on Habs podcast. I'm Connor LaPalme, and as always, I'm joined by Johannes Wilden. How's it going, Johannes?
Greetings, Connor. I am still sweating gravy.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you're going to tell us all about your poutine adventures in Montreal. Plus, even though you are in Vermont, you celebrated Canadian Thanksgiving like a good Canadian. So I'm sure there was a lot of gravy to be had all weekend for you.
It was, I've been doing this keto thing for about a year, and I can safely say I did not meet any of my macros in the last 3 days.
No, you don't think?
No, it was an awesome trip. It was a beautiful drive up. I managed not to hit any of your fair citizens' bicycles or cars driving to the hotel, which is always a good thing. It's always an adventure driving in Montreal. But mostly I maintained my zen, had my All-Canadian playlist on the way up. The game was awesome, obviously. Do you want me to get right into it? You want the play-by-play or what? Is that what we're doing here?
We'll build up today. I just wanted to get some initial impressions. We can talk about your poutine restaurant choices if you want, but we'll get your impressions of the game and your... Or do you want to, we can just wait till the end if you want? And we just got a little teaser here, or do we want to, I'm not sure.
Well, the first thing that we did, so I'll just give you the brief play-by-play of the trip, sure. And then we'll go. So we got up there, and my first stop was Sport Agus and NDG. And Brendan Kelly had actually written about the owner in the Gazette, a guy named Angus, who was very amused to hear that we were from Vermont, and we ended up chit-chatting for about 40 minutes. I decided that I liked the place so much I had to buy something even if I didn't strictly need it. My buddy who was with me got some sticks. Angus started throwing free stuff at us, and we had a really good experience. Obviously not a big box store. It's a community spot. He doesn't have a ton of product, but it's where Molson takes his kids' skates to get sharpened, apparently. And so there was lots of Habs talk and lots of concern about the Blues that night. Then we went to the hotel and we had our first poutine of the day. And I'll give you the poutine rundown. But I didn't quite do every 90 minutes, but I was pretty well poutined by the time we hit the border on the way home.
I hope. Every 90 minutes, you might have had to take advantage of the Montreal healthcare system before you went back.
Yeah, we sent a few pictures around, and one of my buddies said, now I understand why Canadian has free healthcare. But overall, fairly exciting week for the Habs. Obviously, capped off by an amazing game on Saturday, which, you know, I think everyone's still excited about and thinking about. So lots to get into there. But I guess we should start... earlier in the week, did you manage to see the Sabres game? But before Saturday night, I would have said that was the best game of the season so far.
Yeah, I mean, it was a fun game for sure to watch. Kind of like the Toronto game, too, and even the Carolina game. It was fast. It was back and forth. A lot of the things, you know, fans love but coaches kind of hate, I think. You know, some of the issues that I think, you know, we were worried about through the first two games were there as well in Buffalo, you know, the defensive zone issues. But, you know, the Canadians were able to, for the third game in a row, push the game to overtime. Unfortunately, they lost 5-4, but still able to squeak out a point. And I think is also, I think the last couple of years we've been sort of saying this thing that Montreal, you know, had, you know, the way the points are set up anyway, Montreal, if they had only been able even to push a couple of games into overtime, you know, might have made all the difference. So, you know, while they lost the first two out of the three, they banked points in all of them, which, you know, is a good thing. You'd still rather see them win, obviously. But, you know, it was a fun game to watch, quick-paced, and, like, I'm sure your son was pretty ecstatic with the result.
Yeah, there's a few Buffalo Sabres fans down here, and so everyone wanted to talk to me about it at hockey the next night. Better than Bruins. There's lots of Bruins fans down here. It's really unfortunate, but no, you know, this is a good Buffalo team. You know, they're 4-0 on the year so far. They're scoring a ton of goals. They're not letting in that many, which is, I think, you know, Buffalo teams of the past couldn't really count on great goaltending necessarily, and they seem to have sort of solved that early on in the season. Who knows what happens in the future, but no, that was a fun skating game. It was great to watch, back and forth. Again, all the things we love about this iteration of the Montreal Canadiens: fast skating, good pace, no quit, lots of effort, lots of fun. And, you know, look, shootouts are going to go whatever way they go. It's impossible to really figure out. Obviously, Habs lost in the OT itself, but after taking that dodgy penalty with, what, 20 seconds left in the third, it's what's going to happen. But ultimately, you like to see them compete, skate hard. And unfortunately, they followed up what was a great effort on earlier in the week with not a great effort in their home opener. Did you see the Detroit game?
Yeah, that one was a bit tough to watch. You know, I think Detroit, everyone has memories of last year where Montreal kind of beat up on them a bit. So I think it was easy to assume that, you know, Montreal would sort of continue their, I guess, dominance. However, you know, Detroit's a different year. They seem to be a bit of a different team. You know, I think, you know, they have a record similar to Montreal, so you know, they're not quite the tire fire people were expecting. And Montreal was coming back. They were on the road the first three games, first game back at home. You know, they had all their pregame ceremony, you know, celebration and stuff, things that they do very well. And, yeah, the team just came out and seemed flat to me. And, you know, they tried to push back, but it just seemed, you know, Detroit had all the answers. And, I mean, that line of, was it Mantha and Larkin and
Bertuzzi.
And Bertuzzi were just everywhere. And, you know, Detroit got a couple of fluky goals as well, like funny bounces that kind of made their way onto a Detroit stick. You know, the one I think of is, I think Bertuzzi scored with like 30 seconds left in the first period after Jonathan Drouin tied it just before. Unless I'm remembering it wrong, but I remember like Detroit had kind of got themselves back into a game, back into it with a fluky bounce.
Yeah, so Armia just scored the first goal in that game.
Yeah, and then Drouin scored, and then with like a minute and a half left, and then with like 30 seconds left in the period, Bertuzzi scored. And it just seemed like Montreal had no pushback from then on. They tried. You know, Julien made a couple of lineup changes, especially on defense. He took out Cale Fleury and Brett Kulak. I think he'd also done that in Buffalo. Yeah. Then we saw Christian Follin and who was the other one? It was Follin and
Follin and not Riley.
Mark Riley played in Buffalo, and then yeah. I think Kulak was back in Detroit.
Kulak was back in, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I have my thoughts. I mean, Fleury, I guess, is a rookie. He looked kind of, we're going to, I'm sure, talk about Fleury and Suzuki a bit later. But, you know, it's sort of this weird thing that's happened. Not weird thing, but it seems like it's going to be a trend all year where Montreal is just going to struggle in their own zone. And it doesn't seem like it matters much who the opposition is. And that's, I think, a bit of a concern. You know, hopefully it's something they can clean up because, you know, you hear the common sort of expression where, you know, you can't teach goal scoring, but you can teach defense. So you hope that they kind of figure it out at some point, because if it's, you know, as promising as the results have been, and I'm obviously not perfect, but, you know, like I said, they picked up points in their first three games. You know, if they're going to always be chasing the game in their own end, it's going to, I think, be a longer season. They can't leave Carey Price out to dry like that.
Yeah, I mean, I will say I don't think Price had a great game.
No, I don't think opener. So either.
There were a couple just misplays, I thought, especially on the first goal and the second goal. He just sort of lost track of the puck, and I don't know. I mean, it was closer than I think the score suggested. Obviously, they have the empty net, so it looks like it was a more comprehensive victory than it was. But overall, I think, as you say, that the defensive limitations are becoming ever more clear. And I think I'll be very curious to see, you know, what moves are made. I truly hope this is not a situation where we see how well we do up to the trade deadline and then try to make a steal then. I think there needs to be a better solution. Although I do want to talk to you about the good news that Noah Juulsen's back in Laval anyway, and whether or not he works his way back in the lineup and what that means for Cale Fleury, who hasn't started in a week now. So, but I think overall, I think we both predicted Detroit was going to be a bit of a pushover for Montreal, and that did not seem to be the case. But that was a nice setup for Saturday because apparently Julien was not very impressed with his players and brought them in on Friday. They did a lot of work on the video. And both Deneau referenced it in the post-game recap on Saturday night. And I think Drouin mentioned it as well, that they had, you know, you don't always, not all the work you do is on the ice. There's a lot of important stuff off ice. And there were a couple goals that were definitely, if not set plays, it seemed as though, I'm thinking particularly of the one with that deep puck that got back to Deneau and sort of fired it in the side of the net. They just seemed like they were sharing a brain on that play. Everyone knew exactly where to be. It was a beautiful setup. Were you looking for me during the broadcast, Connor, on Saturday night? Were you scanning your screen?
I was trying. The only problem is the, you know, you told me you were sitting, you know, in the upper bowl, which is it's to be expected when you're in a larger group. You already said you were part of a big group, and that's usually where they are. And then, you know, the camera doesn't tend to go up that way.
You're absolutely right.
I mean, you were there. You're watching the cameras that pan through the audience. It's always down below. Or they go, if they're ever up in the higher, the upper bowl, it's in, like, the Molson X zone where everyone's, you know, ready to have a party because they're all, you know.
Yeah, the saddest thing is watching kids when the guy with the t-shirt gun comes out and, like, the kids up in the 300s think they're going to get a t-shirt, and you realize there's absolutely no way that thing is going any higher than the 12th row of the first section. It was a group of 20 of us, a mix of sort of older and younger, and a few people had some border problems because they for reasons unknown, decide to bring in CBD sleeping pills across the border when you can buy anything that you would ever want in the city of Montreal. In fact, that was one of my big takeaways. The smells in downtown Montreal on a Saturday night were pungent. And it was fascinating. Like, I'm still... Things have changed. I don't like to consider myself old, but things have changed so fast when it comes to that stuff that it's a very different dynamic. But I want to set the scene for you, if I could. We went in there. We got our first patin at Nick's near Place d'Art, and then we made our way down to the Bell Center. We were going to try and meet up with people at the beer market or – there were a couple other spots that we were going to try and figure it out, but everywhere was absolutely slammed by 5 o'clock, which you would definitely warn me about. But my buddy who was with me wanted to get some souvenirs, so he had to go down and get some shirts and some whatever. It was scarf night on Saturday night, so we all went home with a nice Habs scarf, which my son is sporting with great excitement. But we walked down and we sort of hit the concourse where, like, just outside the Bell Center there, or the little square, and I just felt like, these are my people. I was wearing my jersey. I had my Thomas Bulcanic turtleneck on, which I thought was going to get a little more love, but no one really seemed to notice. And I just, it felt so good to be amongst my people. I saw some PK Subban jerseys. I saw some Lafleur jerseys. I saw some lots of Pricers. I even saw a signed Kokaniemi jersey worn by a Finnish guy who had definitely started his pregame many hours before. But it was great to be down there. The crowd was super cool. Everyone was really fun. We went in. We got our second patin of the night because my buddy insisted on getting a classic patin.
At the Bell Center?
Yeah, at the Bell Center, he insisted, so we had to do that.
How about run you like $20 or?
You know, when you're spending American dollars,
that's true. It's
funny. The colorful money it stops making any sense, and then you convince yourself that, like, the exchange rate's really going to benefit you. So whether it's true or not, you're just sort of like, eh, whatever.
Well, yeah, you're on vacation to some extent, so you just kind of let things roll. I get it.
I did avoid the beer mostly. We had a couple pre-games and then had a can once we got down there. But I think I told you before, I'm not a big beer drinker. Mm-hmm. I just don't want to deal with the bathroom situation. And if I'm there, I want to focus on the game. That's my deal. So we got up there, we got set, and look, say what you will about the Montreal Canadiens. I'm not a big fan about the torch passing at the beginning of the home openers every year. I just think it's a lot of pomp with very little circumstance, but whatever. They do put on a good show on a Saturday night, and it was really fun to be there. And take it all in. So where we were, we had a great – I loved the warm-ups. I was a big fan of getting there a little early and watching the warm-up moves they do. It was a fantastic evening. And obviously to come away with the win against such a good team and at home and – you know, a special moment. It's been a lot remarked on this week, but was the crowd reaction to Jonathan Drouin after the game. But maybe that's just sort of get into the game itself. So you were watching it. First goal was a little weird. It really felt like Montreal was dominating in the first period. And then St. Louis just found another gear, and a lot of pucks seemed to be going the other way. The third period got really chippy, and there were some late hits. There was a punch. There was butt in, and there were some strange collisions. It just seemed like St. Louis lost their focus and sort of became a little more goony, which I was a little surprised to see. But obviously for the Habs to be tied going into the third period, 3-3, and then just to find – you know, the skill to put it away. And not always great goals, right? You got Brendan Gallagher's butt goal. And Domi had the diving swipe in the empty net. And I actually liked Lekkonen's goal. Jordan Wheel obviously missed that amazing one-timer, which, he's still upset about.
Yeah, I mean, the game, it was back and forth till the third period. I mean, it was 3-3 after two periods. You're right. The Montreal came out kind of like a house on fire. I think they wanted to make up for the poor showing against Detroit. And they did kind of dominate, but, you weren't obviously privy to the broadcast on television. So,
right.
They had made, first of all, they made a lot of reference to the Friday film session. I think I heard them talk about it at least 5 times.
Yeah.
And, St. Louis apparently all year has kind of been falling behind, and Jordan Binnington kind of lets them hang around in games, and they kind of find their gear. So it seemed like that was almost what was going to happen, Even though Montreal was leading after one, or the second period early, they tie it on another kind of wonky goal that Price probably wants back, that Sammy Blais goal from the side of the net there.
Yeah.
And then on the power play, Vince Dunn makes it 3-2, and we're thinking, okay, I guess St. Louis is really going to start asserting their authority. But then, like you said, that Philip Deneau goal, about three minutes later, ties it up, and then it's a new game. And then, the Lekkonen goal was great. And I just liked that the three goals, we're not going to count the Max Domi empty net goal, but the two goals that Montreal scored in the third were nice, but they were kind of dirty.
Yeah, close to the net.
And they need those. They need to do that. And we all know Gallagher does it. And, again, on the broadcast on CBC, Gary Gallagher was making a big point as to why they didn't challenge it, which I also kind of agree with. If you're St. Louis, what do you have to lose at that point of the game?
Well, last year they definitely would have challenged it, and it would have been a 50-50 call about whether that goal would have counted.
But, I know the penalty thing, but if you're going to have – what's the choice? You get it wrong and you're down 2 – and you have a power play to kill, and it's not like Montreal's power play is a vaunted power play. Or the best case, that gets overturned. I'm just saying, strategy wise, most coaches I think would have made that. I mean, going down by 2, it's almost lights out, right? I mean, it was, but in most cases, it's game over, and it's unlikely you're going to score 2 goals in under 10 minutes. It was a fun game, a good bounce back game. For pretty much the whole team after what happened in Detroit. And, they gave you a good show, which I think was definitely mostly on everyone's mind. They knew you were there.
Yeah, definitely. Everyone was worried about my good time that night, yeah.
Exactly. And they decided to show you a good time. And, the thing with Jonathan Drouin was nice. He got the big ovation. He did have a tough year. He has definitely been playing on another level so far this year, which is good to see.
So let's just hold that thought, because I have a few things to say about Drouin. Yeah, we'll get to that stuff later. But wait, let me just – you made a good point about it's very different watching the game without announcers. So it's almost unnerving at first because you're like, I'm so primed to hear commentary as it goes, right. And it's so weird not to hear it. And then in my head, I can hear it a little bit, but it's not quite the same. But here's something that's weird at the Bell Center. They have this huge screen in the center of the ice, right? Yes, multiple ways to watch the TV. And at some point, you find your eyes going to the TV, even when the game is right in front of you, just because you're so primed to see the screen. But when there's a power play, they've got the smallest numbers ever in the tiniest corner of the screen. And if anybody from the Bell Center is listening, I know Mr. Molson listens to our pod quite a bit, just make those numbers bigger. Like, I don't understand what are you hiding from? Why wouldn't you? It's not like you don't have the real estate. Make the numbers bigger on the scoreboard so we can get a sense of what's happening. Because a lot of times you couldn't even notice the power play was about to end. And I don't know. The difference was really marketable. It's interesting. It definitely suggests to me that I need to watch more hockey at the arena and not on my television.
Yeah, I actually, my father-in-law, when he's been to not too many games, because he needs the announcers. He doesn't like without the announcers. I actually don't mind without the announcers. I find a lot of times the announcers can be kind of hard to listen to. Depending on what station you're listening to, I actually like... Yep. I kind of like the quiet and hearing the noise of the game and all that stuff, and I guess I focus in a bit more, and I find the game actually passes by a lot quicker when you're there than when you're watching it on TV. I guess because even though they cut away to commercials, you know, at the building, it feels like there's stuff just distracting you more than, I guess, at home. But that's just me. I enjoy it. But I know what you're saying about, you know, initially you're kind of looking for the someone to tell you what's happening. But,
yeah, it's like, who's got the game on mute? What's going on here?
And yeah, the screen is massive, and I know what you're saying about the numbers, the penalty number, the time left in the penalty or whatever. It's weird, but I'm sure there's some kind of marketing research that sort of says, you know, the important stuff that you should maximize and stuff you should minimize. I don't know.
Oh yeah, like the Desjardins ads. So I have a few ideas by watching. So in my illustrious writing career, I once wrote an article for the Hockey Writers. Which was I definitely got ratioed that day, but it was basically being critical of the Nashville Predators and their the fan chants and you know stuff they do, and I was just trying to think of better things to do. So here's one thing that I really like, and I first heard it in Colorado. I think other teams do it as well. But when the power play ends. And it's back up, or I guess when the penalty kill ends and you're back to full strength, they do like the Super Mario mushroom sound.
Okay.
When you go do 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 or whatever, like that noise when you like become from the little. I don't know if any of our younger listeners know what the hell I'm talking about, but the smaller Mario to bigger Mario. But yeah. But Connor, you're a Game of Thrones fan, right? You watched the whole series.
Yes.
Okay, so think about this: when you're sitting in the Bell Center. And you're playing the Montreal Canadiens, and you get a penalty, and you go to the penalty box, and the whole crowd goes, shame, shame, shame. And they do the bell, right? Dung, shame, dung, shame. How awesome would that be?
It'd be kind of cool. I agree. That's actually, that's a pretty good one. It's just organizing everyone to get in on the gag. I've always been a fan of this thing they do in Europe. I noticed it first in the World Cup in Germany in 2006, where I got, you know, when the guy, when whoever scores, right, the guy makes the big announcement on the thing, and he's like, goal scorer by number, let's say it's 11, and he'll say, Brendan, and then the whole crowd yells Gallagher.
Oh, that's awesome.
And that was, I thought that's incredible. Like, that would be cool in hockey, especially because, you know, soccer's played outdoors, so the sound can travel up, whereas... You know, imagine scoring like a big goal and the whole freaking Bell Center just like, you know, drowns out everything with yelling someone's name that scored. I think that would, the players would probably love it. And I just think it'd be a cool thing to get fans involved because I agree. Sometimes while I like the level of participation they have in like Nashville, and I don't necessarily mind their chants as much as say, I guess you, but. Yeah, it'd be good to find
out. I just don't like the carry, you suck. You suck. It's all your fault. It's all your. It's just like. It reminds me of high school silliness. Like, come on, we're adult. Yeah. We're grown-ass people. We can do better than that.
Fine. Yeah, you're right. But, you know, whatever. It's hockey.
Yeah, people can do whatever they want. But I just think it's lame and I judge them when they do it. But I do think I'm out on the singing of Olé. It's played out.
It was like the Na 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 Hey Goodbye, right? I mean, in when I was growing up, they only ever sang that song when it was the playoffs and the Canadians eliminated a team. That was it. And now I think part of it is people are so desperate to be part of sort of, I guess, the glory years or to have that kind of nostalgia. They start singing, you know, Olé's kind of became their little chant. And fine, I guess, if you want to be to get the crowd going. But it's like they start singing that stuff too early or at not the right time, I find. Like people just want to...
It doesn't take many people to get that song started. Like I heard one guy up in the 400s start to sing Olé, and then everyone just chimes right in. Look, those older songs are good because people know them and they're sort of melodic and they lend themselves to chorus. But and this is the other thought that I had when I was there, like the amount of music that gets played from the 70s and 80s and 90s is really interesting. And I just feel like the whole Bell Center, and I don't know if you've been there recently, but they've got like these new little kiosks where it's like photos and equipment and like from the past. And they're really playing on this nostalgia thing, which I understand from a marketing point of view, but I just wonder if it's ultimately the best way to grow your fan base, because you're really pandering to the people, you know, who I don't know, maybe saw as a little kid, saw the great 60s run or the 70s run and are sort of like living in this old view of what the franchise is. And we've talked about this before, I think, in a different context about how do you invest in the future when you're so tied to the past? And part of what Montreal's great is the sort of the heritage and the tradition. But at the same time, it feels oppressive sometimes. It doesn't feel like they're making the most of the opportunities to build the game beyond where it is right now.
I agree. Like, you know, you were saying about the opening ceremony. It's like, the first few times I saw like the torch thing was kind of cool. Because they have the slogan in the locker room, and they had it in the forum and all that stuff. But I find they're trading on their tradition too much. Whereas like you to sort of ignore, distract from sort of what has, I mean, outside of last season, to sort of distract about what's going on. They go back to that stuff, I find, a little bit too much. And you know, there's a time and a place to celebrate the great history of your team, especially if you're like, you know, like the Montreal Canadiens or the New York Yankees, or you know, you need to celebrate that past, right? And I know to your point, you know, you don't want to always be trading in you know, past currency, I guess is what we're going to call it. But I mean, for Montreal, like New York, you know, they could talk about Babe Ruth or Maurice Richard. It's not going to curb any kids from becoming Canadiens fans. But the other side of that too is, right, the most of the people that can afford to buy tickets aren't going to be kids. It's going to be those kids' parents. So, you know, if I'm bringing my kid to a game, maybe I don't want to hear as much, you know, unfortunately it happens. You know, the older you get, you stop being with it. And, you know, you hear stuff that's sort of the kids like, and you're like, what the hell is this?
And that's funny.
It happens to everyone, and it's unfortunate. Anyway, I know what you're saying. Like, it's a bit, they kind of feel like, not frozen in time, but they definitely trade on that a lot, I find.
So and the buddy that I went with, or that I sat with at the game, because we were a group of 20, but the guy that I spent the most time with, I play hockey with him later tonight, and he found Max Domi's Spotify playlist. Okay. And he thinks we're going to play it at hockey tonight. And then he texted me later. He's like, actually, I don't know if I can play this because it's going to offend like half the people who are there. And I'm like, yeah, you're normally offensive, Martel. Go ahead, do it. So it's going to be interesting to see. But I guess maybe that's part of it too. Like what's interesting is that you're in the arena and you hear the music that's on like EA, NHL 19 or whatever. Yeah. Like it's essentially a playlist that hits the old pleasure centers. But I don't know. what's the future? And what are we going to do beyond this current? I don't really know.
But it's so also, look, there's someone in charge of that stuff too. Like, I know when Vertigo was the Habs goal song, which most people hated, it was the guy, I can't remember who it was, but he was in charge and he loved U2, and that's why it became the goal song.
Yeah.
So there's also that kind of little aspect to it. The guys who are picking what gets played, I guess, you know, you obviously have to pay rights for songs to play them. You know, the person picking them is obviously, you know, if they're, you know, 45 and plus, they're obviously might not trend that way, which I see your point too. But anyway, I know. I feel like we're talking about
Look, we got things, the Bleu Blanc et Rouge. That was good. I don't like the goal song, but it was kind of fun to be like standing up and pumping your fist on the hay. You know, da-na-na-na-na, hey, da-na-na-na-na, hey. Like, that part was fun, and it's easy for everybody to do. But I do wish that we just sort of get, like, a little more creative with the involvement. And look, just back to the torch thing. Maybe we should save the torch for when the playoffs start.
Sure.
First night of the playoffs, provided the Canadians ever make it again. You know, like, the beginning of the season, I don't know. I just feel like everything gets so built up. And the last few years, they've come out pretty flat. So I just think, I don't know, that's mix it up a little bit. That's it's okay to mess with tradition a little bit every once in a while.
Or it's okay just to not constantly be living, like you were
saying. In the past.
So like they're constantly, especially lately, and it's kind of one of the things, Ken, I know we're like kind of way out in left field here, but, you know, when Red Fisher was the great Montreal writer for the Gazette, and he covered the Canadiens for a long, long, long time. But I used to get sometimes a little annoyed where you'd hear all these people talk about, you know, we'd have these lists of like the greatest Canadians of all time. And it's like, okay, yeah, I get it, right? You know, Lafleur, Béliveau, Mouchard, all these guys, and it's great. But at the same time, it's like, how are we supposed to think, like, how are we supposed to move forward if we're always talking about this other thing that, you know, in all likelihood isn't going to happen again? Like, you know, people, even when the Canadians win, people sometimes aren't happy if they've grown up watching the 70s teams that were so dominant. And like, what are you going to do? Those were like, you know, a team that loses 11 games all year. How are you supposed to compare that to anything? That's never going to happen again. Even building a roster that deep and full of that much talent is that you can't sustain it for 5 years anymore. Right. So it's that where you kind of have this weird, you know, thing where people want and it. I'm going to bring it in here because I can go on forever about this because, you know, I appreciate the history, but I find people live with it too much, and it really curbs things.
So let's talk about the future, though, right? Jonathan Drouin.
Sure.
So I think we both agree he's had a great start to the season. We've seen sort of more grit from him, more effort. He hasn't given up on pucks. He's been involved in the game.
Yeah.
He's got more points, I think, through the first 2 weeks that he's had in a while, and he's been a game changer every game. How much you watched the broadcast on Saturday night? Did you see the Drouin interview? It was in French, and they were he was at ice level, and the crowd sort of gave him.
They cut it. I was watching on CBC.
Right, because they cut that
station that cover. It's weird here, but there's two stations that cover the Canadians in French. RDS, who had it forever, but now TVA has it. They kind of deal with Rogers when Rogers got the NHL rights, and it's a subscribed station, so because I can watch it in English for free on Saturdays, I'm not going to pay for literally to watch one hockey game on the weekend.
No, I hear you.
You know what I mean? I'm so they cut a, so you know, CBC cuts away. They go to their next West Coast game and stuff. So I didn't. I mean, I saw parts of it online because people were posting it, and it seemed really cool. But they were talking about him during the game for sure. I mean, it's. Anyone who's just watching can see he looks different. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say he looks different, and your old buddy Wheels here called that when he took him in his hockey bowl. I'm feeling pretty happy about that choice. But the goal he scored on Saturday night, it was the old Drouin, like sort of flash, sort of east-west move. He got a great pass from Sherratt, made a great move. Just over the blue line, top of the circle, and then blasted it short side. And it was just such a nice shot. And it was a mix of, it was like him getting rewarded for doing the stuff he didn't do last year by the stuff that he did do okay last year really working out. And that's really what I felt watching it. But so just in the interest of accuracy, I've heard a lot of people report that it was a standing ovation. And that gives you the impression that, like, everybody in the arena was on their feet clapping and cheering. That wasn't really what it was. It was the end of the game, so, like, about half the arena was either out or making its way out. So there were a few people who stuck around, and we were one of them. But the thing that was – it was emotional. Like, there was a – I don't know if you've seen the thing. Like, he sort of got – he was talking for a bit, and he sort of got – caught something caught in his throat kind of, and the crowd just sort of like saw that and reacted to it and like embraced him, you know, whatever that thing that happens between athletes and crowds. There was just like this feeling of we see you, Jonathan. We have given you shit and we have seen you and we want more of this and you're one of us. And I just thought it was a, you know, there have been so many questions about him, about his attitude, all the stuff with Tampa Bay and refusing to show up to the AHL team and then the trade, and everyone thought he was going to be great. He was placed at center, didn't really work out, didn't have a great year last year. And, you know, it's just a reminder that he's a young guy, and whatever seems to be happening, at least in the short term, seems to have had an impact on him. And I really, really hope this is the new Jonathan Drouin that we can bank on, because it's a great addition, if so.
Absolutely. I mean, if he can maintain this sort of level of play throughout the season, because I think last year, I mean, I wouldn't say he was this motivated is the word I'm going to use. But I mean, for the first half of the season, he was pretty good.
He produced points.
I know, but he was, I mean, the second half, the lasting memory is pretty much him as of after January doing, like, pretty much nothing.
Yeah.
That's sort of the lasting memory that people had him, you know. He came out, I started him on the third line with Kokanyemi, and then by the end of the week, he worked himself up to the not quite the top line, but the second one, depending on how you want to, you know, there's the, I think people think that call the Deno, Gallagher, and then, is it Lekkonen line? The first line, and then, you know, Domi, Drouin, Wheel now, I guess, is the second line. But, you know, it's good for him, and, like, he's being rewarded, and it was nice for him to get a sort of a goal scorer's goal versus the other goal he scored, which kind of banked off his stick, or his skate in Toronto.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's good. And, yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm sure for anyone, if you've been dealing with something where you're catching a lot of grief for a long time, you can't avoid it, I'm sure, in Montreal, where everyone's wondering what's wrong and how he's doing and should they keep him, should they trade him. He's a waste of thing. You know, he's a waste of space, and then he bounces back. And, you know, Montreal, when you're doing well, is a great place to be. But we've also seen the flip side is when you're not doing well, it's a pretty hard place to play. And so, you know, it's good that, you know, because people appreciate – they can see when you're trying and they appreciate it. And
well, I think that's the big thing because I don't – obviously, he had a decent year last year, and most of his points came in the first half of the season or whatever. Yeah. But I think the thing about him was that we saw a lot of, like, flashy, like, head bops, and, like, we saw a lot of east-west dangly stuff. But what we've seen this year is more sandpaper, more grit, more willingness to go in the corners, fight for pucks. And
more direct.
Yeah, and more involved. He wants to be involved in every play, and I think that's the – that's the difference, because now he's combining that finish with that effort that we've often talked about. And that seems to be a difference maker for him. When he can combine those two consistently, you know, he has the potential to be a point a game player, and that's massive. That would be huge for this team.
Yeah. No, I agree. And again, I always say, let's hope he can keep it going. I mean, I don't think he'll stop. You know, but like all things, I mean, I'm sure there's obviously going to be peaks and valleys throughout the season, there is with every player. But you know, you just want to hope the effort is always there. Like you kind of watch someone like Brendan Gallagher, where it's, even if it's not working, Gallagher's always working hard. And I know Drouin isn't that kind of player, but you hope that, you know, that work ethic is still there even when things aren't going as well as they are right now. Because, you know, like, you know, we've said it before, when you see someone just still trying or putting in the effort, even though it's not going in, or, you know, the team's not succeeding, you can't I mean, you can always find a way to crap on a player, but, you know, if you see them trying to do stuff and make stuff happen and going into the dirty areas, it's harder to point a finger as to say that they're not, you know, contributing or they're coasting. And, you know, it's a very good sign for Montreal because they definitely need Jonathan Drouin if they're going to be, you know, competitive and challenging for a playoff spot this year. Just before we move on from this, did you see those signs that someone posted up around the Bell Center about the
minimum? I did. I took a picture of it, and it was going to be part of my, like, photo essay of our trip to Montreal, and I never got around to it. Yeah, so do you think we can we put it on the website? I don't know if we can put it on the pod page, but there's a picture that says minimum 10. And basically it's referring to, you know, this, I presume it's referencing the Serge Savard comments from last week, but also this idea that Montreal Canadiens should have a minimum of 10 Quebecois-born players on their team. And correct me if I'm wrong, Connor, they have three right now, right? Mete, Drouin, and Deneau.
It's Drouin, Deneau. I'm not sure about Mete. I don't think Mete's from B.C.,
oh, well, for some reason I thought he was English, but
Montreal. Oh, he might be. I was so sure he was from out west.
But I mean, I started thinking right about now, well, are there even 10? Like that's half your roster right there. That's not a small suggestion. Yeah, not, he is okay. It is a. It's quite an ask. Number one,
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, it's just not reason. Like, how would you even the amount of effort when it comes to drafting and then free agency and like trying to maintain that is, you know, the quest for parity would decimate the team. And not because there are no good French Canadian players. It's just that there's not enough of them to where you'd be able to get them on contracts that would make sense for your overall team. That's going to fit within the overall balance. So it was to me a reminder of the politics that exist in Quebec like nowhere else around this question of identity when it comes to the Montreal Canadiens. And it's you know, it's I'm from English Canada. That's where I grew up. I never really understood Quebec. Most of my experiences of Montreal was like going there and not feeling cool enough to be there because like I didn't wear my scarf in the right way or my jeans weren't tight enough or whatever. But like it's just a reminder of the way that linguistic politics and identity still matters in Montreal and Quebec generally.
Well, it matters isn't the right word. Montreal, I don't think it matters as much as other places in the province. And, you know, like most places, like even in the States, right, things that matter to big cities, like to where the most of the population is, don't necessarily apply to people in, let's say, the Rust Belt or the Bible Belt or, you know, so it's weird where you have this, like, segment outside of, say, Montreal and major areas that complain about things that, A, don't really affect them because, you know, they probably live in a pretty homogeneous area in terms of language. But yeah, it's just this stupid crap that comes up every so often when it seems like there's nothing to talk about. Someone's got to get on the horn or get on the radio or get on TV and start making this stupid. And I'm going to preface my little rant here. I might use colorful language, so I'm sorry. But you know, I just find it really frustrating that this has to come up every so often. Like the Canadians are purposely going out of their way to, you know, not draft Quebec players. And, you know, the bigger issue is, A, the Q isn't developing as many players that get drafted. And so that means, you know, they're not developing as many high-quality players that get drafted. And so, like, what do you want? You know, they want them to have this great Quebec team that only speaks French, but there's not enough players. And, you know, you could sit here and they'll say, well, Claude Giroux. Like, well, Claude Giroux technically is from Ontario, so he's not really a good chez nous. And I just find that this stuff like that is so... It's such narrow and small thinking. It's stupid. And if I hope to God, I mean, it doesn't seem like Bergevin thinks like that, or most GMs think. Well, maybe Rajon will thought like that. But you know, most GMs, you can't think like that because you're gonna. I mean, the Canadians already are boxed in by the people they can pick as their coach and GM because they need to be bilingual, which I get is an asset, but you're also limiting your prospect pool significantly. You can't do it to a team, and I just find it's just this stupid crap But some person who is writing it's and okay, I know you read. I don't know if you like Brendan Kelly, but you know I he's the guy in the Gazette who writes. I mean, he writes stuff that he. I find it has basis and like some of the stuff he's
noted Bergeron fan Brendan Kelly.
Yeah, but I also think sometimes he kind of goes over the top and looks for issues that aren't there to kind of pick at, and I find it's a little much and it's a little. Not extreme, but you know it's over the top, I find it. But the thing is, the French media has had that for a while, where if anything's slow or if things are going a little too good or whatever, oh, we got to bring up this issue about les gars chez nous. And if for all of these you don't speak French, that just means guys from home or guys from here. That you know the team needs to be filled. And I know that there's the tradition of having these great Quebec superstars, you know, Maurice Richard, Jean Béliveau, Guy Lafleur. I mean, to a lesser extent, there was Stéphane Richer. I mean. But the other thing, I'm sure there's other guys I'm not naming, Bernie Geoffrion, you know, Jacques Plante, you know, but still, Patrick Waugh. I get it. It matters. Like, it helps. It definitely helps. It helps with the narrative. It helps with all this other stuff. But if you're going to sit here and tell me, well, we can have a team that's made up mostly of Quebec players, but we're not going to win, you know, we're going to win like 20 games, or we can have this better team that's going to win, you know, 50 games. Which one will they take? You know, like, do you want to win a Stanley Cup, or do you want to have this prideful French thing, the team that might not do anything? And that's this weird thing place we're at. And you know, I don't know. Well, when the Nordiques were still around, because they were playing in Quebec City, where the provincial government is, and I don't know, I just find they got more of that brunt when they were around, whereas Montreal didn't necessarily have to. Montreal was the divisions where Quebec was the team of the Francophones and Montreal was the team of the Anglos, which didn't make sense, even if you think about it, but that's just how it kind of fell when they were both in the league. And since Quebec has left, all this weird attention now has been focused on Montreal, and it's, you know, I just find it so stupid and so frustrating. It's like the same people who are complaining there's no Quebecois, the 10 minimum Quebecois on the team are the same people who be like, well, why doesn't anyone want to come play here? Why can't they sign any free agents? Well, if I'm a free agent, I see that crap coming up. I'm like, why the hell do I want to sign here? If, you know, people already kind of don't want me because, you know, my name isn't Jacques Francois or whatever. It's, you know, I don't know, John Smith. It's just, it's stupid. And I mean, you can almost see it happening in preseason where Mario Tremblay, who, you know, is, I think, one of the biggest idiots in hockey, was going after Kotkaniemi in the preseason because, okay, granted, he didn't have a good preseason, but he was like, he's the target now. He did it with Patrick Waugh when he was on the radio, and he's also how that went, you know, how it ended up. But it's just this stupid crap where they got to find this guy they got to pick at. You know, he's a young kid. He's, what, 19? And you're going to start picking at him in the preseason. And, you know, you're going to wonder why in 5 years if Mario Tremblay and all these people giving him shit, he's going to want to not sign here. Anyway, I'm going to end my rant. It pisses me off because it's people who don't even necessarily care about hockey that bring this shit up. And it causes this big problem where we got to talk about it. And I know I brought it up, but people talk about it. It became a thing in the news here. It became a thing. People were taking pictures and it's just, it's embarrassing.
And it's performative. It's not really thought out. And I think if anyone's listened to this and they're like, yeah, but you know, Quebec should have better players and the Montreal Canadiens should draft them. Fine. I don't disagree with you, but that means revisiting your development program. Because I'll tell you right now, if you look at the countries that are getting the top players drafted, they have embraced a development model in youth hockey that is very, very different from what you're doing now in Canada. And I know this because when I did my USA hockey training and they talk about the American development model, it's based on what they do in Sweden and Finland, number one. And number two, I know for a fact that Vermont and Massachusetts are the two states in which they haven't adapted to this new model and are not producing enough players that are getting serious looks when it comes to draft day. And I just think I've heard about, you know, you're playing full ice games in Canada for kids that are younger than 10. You're focusing on the score of a game for players who are under 8. It is not what anyone who is taking this stuff seriously is doing. And I know everyone says, oh, everyone participation medal, blah, blah, blah. What you want are multi-sport athletes who love the game, who do not get pushed by parents who don't know any better, and then drop out once they hit a certain point and just cannot take it anymore. What you want is to build a love for the game. That means that when they're 30, 40, and 50, they go and play a couple nights a week. And they support the game for fun, not only to meet the vicarious needs of parents. And there's my rant.
Yeah, it's true, because it's easy to say, why don't they pick more players from the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League? But again, the numbers show they're not producing they're not producing enough numbers for that. And it's easy to say, you know, I mean, you can always look at the people the Canadians have blown picks on, right? I mean, the most famous one is Patrice Bergeron. They totally whiffed at that. And that also speaks to the Canadians needing better scouts, where guys like Bergeron, even I guess Yanni Gourde, shouldn't be found by other teams. But, you know, that happens all the time. So, you know, it's nice. It's a nice sentiment, and I get it. Definitely helps. Like I said, it's a nice narrative. I mean, I got into this stupid Twitter conversation with this guy who said, "Oh, it's a must." This is why. That's why hockey doesn't succeed in the States, because they don't have enough local guys. I'm like, like, what are you even talking about? Like, he's like, sports don't succeed there because they don't have enough local guys.
Nobody knows where anybody is from. You know, the only place where people know where players are from? Quebec. That's the only place. Yeah, no one's like, we don't like Austin Matthews because he's from Arizona. That's not a thing.
Well, exactly. And it's that kind of stupidity that it's like, it shouldn't matter. It's nice to have. I think it's great if it happens, you know, but it's also if you're constantly needing to do that, then it's a problem, because you're handcuffing yourself. And like we've already spoken about, they're already handcuffing themselves in terms of coaching and management. You can't handcuff yourself in terms of roster as well. Anyway, these people piss me off, and this topic gets me really aggravated. So moving on before. we could talk about this for 2 hours.
It's okay to have all the feelings. That's totally okay.
Yeah. Oh no, it's more than all the feelings.
Let's do our winners and let's do winners and losers before we get into the week ahead.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so I'll start with winners. You know, piggybacking off his great first week, I thought Yoel Armia had a great week. You know, he had 3 goals. He had 2 in Buffalo, 1 against the Red Wings. You know, excuse me. He built off his promising first week, where, you know, we saw him kind of, you know, that game in Carolina, he had that shift in overtime where he, you know, just dominated along the boards, and he looked good in Toronto. And, you know, he just looks a little different. Last year he showed some of these flashes, but I don't know what it was, but just he was just kind of meh. He had games where he played well, but I think he also kind of got off to a slow start. This year he's kind of definitely hit the ice running, or skating, however you want to say it. And he just looks good, and the Canadians need more guys like him, because I find, despite the fact they're a lot of fun to watch, they are real small.
Yeah.
And so Armia is one of the guys that gives him a bit of size and can play well. And if he finds a little bit more of a scoring touch, that is also definitely a bump, because, I mean, I don't know, you hear it all the time, right? I think in college, I think he scored like crazy when he was in college or in junior. So it'd be nice if he could find a little bit of that scoring touch as well. It would definitely add a dimension to the Canadians that they haven't necessarily had in quite a while.
Yeah, great pick. Obviously, I started the season with some doubts about Joya Joel, but I'm still not sold 100%, but obviously he's had a great start to the season. 1.2 goal game, and obviously, as you say, that great overtime period, and he tied up the game early in Detroit. And he seems to, as you say, he's bringing the size, but he's also got the hands. And if we see more of that skill combined with the heft, I think that'll be a good thing. For me this week, I can't help but choose Jonathan Drouin, just because I saw that game. I picked him in my hockey draft. I believe that this was the year that he was going to sort of turn it around. And so far, I seem to be proven correct. And I just thought this was the... this is the week that he sort of solidified this new version of him and got recognized, and I really hope that's going to stay with him. If I know I don't get 2 picks, but I just want to give a shout out to Brett Kulak, who, having had sat 2 games this week, got back in and played really well with Jeff Petrie, I thought, and I wonder if that's going to be the second pair going forward. I sure hope it is. Who's your loser this week? Connor, who's your loser this week?
Okay, my loser, I'm going to go with Follin. Actually, no, scratch that. I'm going to go with Kale Flurry. And I'm going to sort of cheat, too. I'm going to go Kale Flurry and Nick Suzuki. Sorry if I stole one of yours. you know, it just Kale Flurry, you know, has been a scratch since the game in Toronto. Nick Suzuki's found his way onto the fourth line, which I'm not a really big fan of. But it just seems like, you know, the kids who there's a bit of expectation on them after they had great training camps, and it seems like they've fallen out of favor a bit with the coach. So, yeah, Flurry, because Flurry's not playing. I mean, at this point, if he's not going to play, just send him down. I know practicing with the professionals is helpful, but if you want him to develop, he needs to play, so let him play. Same thing with Suzuki. If he's going to be on the fourth line, he should just send him down so he gets prime minutes in a professional league. I don't think he's been all that bad. I know they both had really rough nights in Toronto, but I don't think Suzuki has been as terrible as all that. But, you know, as soon as there was a little bit of trouble, the lines went into the blender a bit, and Byron gets bumped up or Wheel gets bumped up, and it's just a little frustrating. I know that you have to make changes when things aren't going well, but I just thought you feel bad for the kid, right? If he's going to be saddled with fourth line minutes, or in Kale Fleury's case, scratched. You'd rather see them getting played in the AHL if they're not going to be playing. And I just think for both of them, it's kind of crappy that they're on the outside looking in, seemingly. Or, well, one is and one's on the verge. And, not necessarily anything to their... I mean, it's not like they've been playing, like, absolute garbage. I mean, it's only, like, you know, five games into the season. But, you know, it's just too bad that they're on the outside looking in. And for that, they're losers this week.
Yeah, I was going to go Kale Flurry mostly in addition to because he's not playing, but also because Noah Juulsen's back. And I think Kale Flurry was a bit of a, you know, they wanted to give him a look and an opportunity. But I expect Noah Juulsen, if his progress continues, to be back up with the big club after he's had a few games to get back into it. So I hope to see that happen. I'm a big Juulsen fan. I like what he brings. Sure. And Kale Flurry is definitely the future, and there's definitely a chance we see him again. Suzuki is an interesting case. Like, I actually liked what I saw out of him on Saturday, even with the limited minutes that he got. I just don't know where he fits right now in the lineup, and it doesn't seem to be, you know, he can't really be an energy guy. We did see him quite a bit on the penalty kill, which was interesting. And he also got a look on the power play. So he was moving the puck, and he had some chances. I just don't think at this point that's enough to keep him up for. I mean, he needs more seasoning. It'll be interesting to see if someone else gets a call up or if they play one of the scratch players, right? I mean, it's the Canadians don't seem to have settled in on what their final roster is going to be going forward. We've seen a lot of sort of switching back and forth, but I thought Follin did fairly well. I think Riley might be on the block. I don't know what you get for him, but I think at this point they've got too many similar defensemen and not enough quality. And so I'm curious to see what that move's going to be, but I haven't given up on Suzuki. I think he's going to get into a few games this week. I think then they'll make a decision about whether he's going to stay or go. And I think I agree with you. He's more likely to go. He's playing his way out of the lineup.
Yeah. It's just, you know, like I said, if Suzuki, if you want him to be this sort of offensive guy, which is what he's on the team to be, you need to sort of play them in that role. And I get a little frustrated when, you know, they start playing guys, you start putting a skilled guy on the fourth line. Like, that was sort of an old school thing where, oh, we're bringing up this hotshot guy who's tearing up the AHL. Now we're going to play him on the, granted, it's a little different now because the minutes are distributed way differently. So it's not like your fourth line is playing 5 minutes a game.
Right.
But, you know, they bring up a guy and stick him on the fourth line, like, oh, well, he's not producing. Well, yeah, you have him skating with two guys who can't play, you know, or that are fourth line guys that are, you know, you're not setting up to succeed. And that's the only thing I'm worried about is he does bring things to the team. I think they like that he can play the power play. He's skilled enough to play the power play, and he can play on the penalty kill. I just don't want him to get saddled on the fourth line where he's going to not play as much as he probably should if you want him, you know, to develop more. I think if he's going to be stuck on the fourth line, he's got to go to the the AHL and play top minutes and know what that's like in a, again, in a professional league, because it's not easy to make a jump from junior to the NHL. I'm not upset that he's not necessarily, I'm not upset he's not tearing it up. I get it. It's the jump in talent and planning and everything is gotta be mind boggling from junior to the professional ranks. So I'm just wondering why, you know, I just think that if you want him to learn in the AHL, that's what it's sort of there for. But anyway, did you hit on your loser of the week?
I did. I picked Cale Fleury.
Although oh, I yes, see your right. point. Yeah, with you're right. Yeah, yeah, you bet. You piggybacked on me. Yeah. So, you know, hopefully, I mean, I agree with you. I think Fleury's definitely gone way sooner than Suzuki. It just, again, I want to see Suzuki playing more. If you want him to be a top six forward, excuse me, play him in a top six role. Part of the reason he made the team is because you need more scoring and more dynamic players in the top six. So,
well, just remember, the end of this week, we're hitting that 9-game mark. Which
well, he doesn't fall into the 9-game thing, actually. Ben Kerr from Last Word told me he doesn't fall into the 9-game thing
because he's not a junior, on ELC.
He's not junior eligible anymore. He's a pro. So they can keep him up as long as they want.
That's kind of nice that they have that, right, in terms of options to –
Yeah, so I mean,
expect to see him in Laval, though, right?
Oh, me
I mean,
too.
That's
the question is if they bring up, let's say, a guy like Paling, where is he? Are they going to stick him on the wing? Anyway,
well, I don't think Paling's been having a tough couple weeks in Laval, and so it's going to be interesting to see. I think it's more Laval's like we see Belisle. What's his name? Belisle.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's apparently the next guy on the depth chart that we might see. But remember, they've got quite a few healthy scratches as well. So,
yeah.
I don't know. It's going to be interesting. So, week to come, what are you seeing?
It's a pretty interesting week. Tonight, the Habs are hosting the Lightning. Thursday, they host the Minnesota Wild. And then Saturday, there is the return encounter in St. Louis to face the Blues. That one is an afternoon start at 3 p.m. So it looks like another tough week for the Canadians. I mean, I know Tampa sort of had a sluggish-ish start. I think they're 2-2-1. So, you know, they're not quite lighting the league on fire like they did last year. But, you know, it's still early. The Tampa Bay still has all their incredible weapons. I think, last Thursday they laid a beating on the Toronto Maple Leafs in Toronto. So, you know, Tampa's still very dangerous, and Tampa and Montreal always play kind of these tight games. It's just weird. Not weird, but it's this sort of new era rivalry that's kind of developed, so it'll be a fun game. Minnesota, I don't have much of a read on. I just find Montreal tend to struggle against Western competition, even though they took care of business against, St. Louis. I think... You know, even though the Wild are not doing so great right now, I think they're 1-4.
1-4, yeah.
Yeah, Montreal, if all things are fair, Montreal should take care of business. But I just find the Wild are one of those teams that just know how to play Montreal. And Montreal struggles with them for some reason. I hope I'm wrong, but, you know. And Saturday, St. Louis should be, I think we're going to maybe see a different St. Louis Blues team. If I'm a Blues fan, I hope, because, you know, like I said, they've gotten off to a lot of slow starts. And you hope they can correct that their sake. I think they'd want to get a bit of payback for what happened in Montreal. Because it seems like Montreal kind of, you know, after the second period, Montreal kind of took over that game. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. It's a, you know, two of the three teams are, you know, the best team in the league last year, and then St. Louis is Stanley Cup champions. You know, Minnesota should be a pushover, but, you know, we thought Detroit was a pushover last week, and we were dead wrong, so... We'll see. It's a bit of an interesting stretch for the Canadians coming up here. Interestingly enough, I don't know if we're going to get to the preview or not next when we record next, but they're also playing the Wild Sunday night in Minnesota. So they're playing these two, St. Louis and Minnesota, you know, twice in the span of, sorry, well, you know, they play St. Louis twice in the span of a week, and they play Minnesota twice in the span of 4 days, home and away. So
yeah,
it's an interesting week. You know, I'd like to think the Wild games, they should win if they want to be this team that we think they are. You know, competing for a playoff spot, you should be taking care of teams lower than you. I think St. Louis is going to get a measure of payback in St. Louis. I think they're really going to throw the weight around. Tampa Bay is going to be interesting because which Tampa Bay shows up, I don't know. But I think Montreal's defensive issues are going to kind of... Tampa's a team that can bury those chances when they get them. Montreal, when they create turnovers in Montreal's zone, and I think it won't be a blowout because, like I said, Montreal and Tampa, for some reason, always play in these tight kind of games. I think it's going to be a tight game, but I think Tampa Bay is going to win. So I think Montreal's going to go 2-2 this week if we're counting the Sunday game against Minnesota as well.
I think we should. I'm saying Montreal's going to win at home against Tampa Bay. They're also going to beat Minnesota at home. I think you're right that St. Louis is going to get their payback. It's an afternoon game, which are always a little weird. And then the Minnesota game, I actually think, is going to go to overtime at 5 p.m. on the Sunday. It's a little earlier start. So I'm calling a 2-1-1 week for the Montreal Canadiens. I wish I could watch tonight very, very closely, but unfortunately I have hockey, so I'm going to have to pay attention on my phone.
it should be a fun game. If we've learned anything early this year from the Canadiens, they're playing a very high tempo run and gun game, and you know that might play right into the hands of the Tampa Bay Lightning. But if all else, it should be fun to watch. So, you know, I'm looking forward to being able to sit down and put my eyes on the game, and hopefully they continue their trend of playing fun hockey, and you know, making Claude Julien lose what's left of his hair.
Well, listen, Connor, I do want to thank you for your suggestions about all the different places to check out in Montreal. I obviously didn't get to go to all of them, but your pool room the Montreal pool room is a very cool spot. And thanks for giving the heads up on that. Was great to just sort of have a look and compare what was around with what you said was good. And it was a fun trip, and I definitely am hoping to do it again. And the next trip, I think we should try and get together if at all possible. So we're going to do that, make that happen.
Sounds good. We can record live. Well,
that'd be fun. Together, live together.
Sounds good.
All right. Well, until next week, may the wind be at your back.
Yep.
The odds ever in your favor.
And as always,
Keep your stick on the ice. All right. Talk soon. Bye.
This has been the Last Word on Habs podcast, brought to you by the Last Word on Sports Network. Join us next week. Until then, see you on the ice.